What I want to see is, have either of you seen the music video to Opposite Subtract by Paula Abdul?
Yeah, the cat, right?
Yeah. I want to see a webcomic about Paula Abdul and the cat trying to have a relationship like 20 years on when both the stars have faded and they're alcoholics. I just want to see that. Just them trying to have a relationship.
10 years later, I imagine that cat would be dead.
He's a human cat, so I assume he'd like have like 3.5 to our years, so maybe he's still kicking it. Maybe
the human cat is still a cat.
Yeah, but he's also human.
He's probably 3 years old in that video, honestly.
There you go. Oh, Jesus. So she's in jail. That's the first comic as a flashback about her just going to jail. I very nearly just went, welcome, welcome, faithful listeners, and I'm like...
You know what? Honestly, I have to stop myself from saying that every single time, just because of, you know, 200 episodes of listening to PodToy, it kind of drills into your head.
I literally just, like, finished re-listening to PodToy again.
I was listening to This Part Goes In today, the one where Jim survives his brother's rape.
Yeah.
Was it Slush Bags in Woolwich? Oh, no, was it something like Jim Stanton's story, Slush Bags I've Known?
Yeah.
Fuck it, can we just, like, play Left 4 Dead and then just, like, post an episode of PodTide?
Oh, we need a stream. Allow me to stream.
Maybe we could get that fucking MMA fan guy who also likes porn stars and Barack Obama on Twitter.
I just wonder if he's still alive.
Don't you wonder if I should start live streaming some stuff since I can actually do that now? Ooh, the level 5 guild games of the 3DS are on sale this week. Liberation Maiden. Crimson Shroud?
I guess I should start then. What can I start with? Okay, here we go. Hello, fuckfaces, fuckettes, and everything in between. My name is Daniel Wales, and this is Community Soda episode 21. Though you may not have heard episode 20, because we can't get it up on iTunes, because, fuck Steve Jobs, piss on his corpse? I don't know!
That's a great way to end that. Just get called away.
Is he dead now? Is he gone?
Yeah, I can't host. I'm just being shouted at. Oh boy, I can't wait to move out. This is fucking emasculating.
Living alone is the greatest thing ever, let me tell you.
It's 11 o'clock. Everybody's decided to go to bed. You can't be awake now. Fuck you.
Welcome to Community Soda anyways. We got John Charles with us today.
Well, I'm eating Christmas cookies.
And Christmas cookies. Special guest host Christmas cookies.
How are you doing today, Christmas cookies?
I'm doing just fine. Hey, John Charles, why don't you put me in your mouth?
Okay, Mr. Christmas Cookie, that sounds like a good idea.
Special guest host, bisexual Christmas cookies. All right, Danny, what have you been doing this week?
Being emasculated, that's a theme of my life, really. Just slapping down any sense of dignity I have. Yeah, it's a good time. It's the best video game, really. It's kind of like
you didn't pull any weird foreign objects from your body this week.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, pulling glass is a lot less painful. I don't know. It's kind of like Dark Souls, you know? Just like every time you get a little bit of power, they just drop a fucking boulder on your head. Ah, life is awesome. But anyway, less moping. I've, like, the Steam sale happened, so, like, I decimated my wallet and enriched my brain with video games.
Anything good?
Oh, Jesus, yeah. I played Saints Row 4. Fucking, if every other game I bought in that Steam sale was fucking turd, Saints Row 4 would make up for it tenfold. Are you kidding me? Jesus Christ, what a game.
I actually think I'm going to try and pick up the Saints Save Christmas DLC tonight.
It makes me so happy. Oh, God. I just love how... It partially worries me. I just do love how now they were like Saints Row 3 was kind of like thematically them just going fuck it, and Saints Row 4 is them mechanically just going fuck it. Like three was, I didn't like 3 as much as I liked 2 because 2 was just I think it was like an expectation thing because 2 is kind of just like an out of nowhere revelation. Like, it's just like, whoa, where the fuck's this been all my life? And then when I played 3, I was like, I was kind of expecting it. And it was still fun, but I was still just, like, shooting dudes in a hallway.
Right.
But then when I got to 4, and I was, like, jumping up buildings, like, sprinting over to an alien, and then powerbombing up a roof while I was dressed like Rowdy Roddy Piper with a luchador mask, and Paula Abdul's Opposites Attract was playing on the radio, I think I was having fun.
See, my thing about that game is, like, if you pay attention to Street Saints Row 4, most of the missions in that game are actually, like, really, really boring. But that's where it's, like, Saints Row 2. Saints Row 2 also gives you really boring, boring missions, but it gives you, like, really crazy tools to do the boring missions, and that's what makes it fun. And then, like, Saints Row 3 was, like, the opposite of that. Really crazy missions, but really boring tools.
Yeah, it's, like, all of the, like, character side missions, like, I do like that they tie all the, like, what were just, like, regular hotspot random missions, like Genki stuff like that in 3, and tied them together with a character, like, a small side character overlay that gave you bonuses as you went, so it gave you a reason to go do all the hacking minigames and shit, as opposed to 2 and 3, where it's like, do this to complete it.
I think it was, like, a bigger way of them, like, making sure that players actually saw all that stuff, because, like, you could play, like, Saints Row 3 without seeing any of that stuff, but it's, like, that's a good way of making sure you have to do, like, at least one hacking thing, you have to do at least one race, you have to do at least one Professor Genki's, but it helps that it's all just, like, super fun with the superpowers.
And it, like I didn't realize it as well, like, the first time I did that, like, the first reward they give you is insane. Like, one of the first lot of side missions you can do for Keith David gives you unlimited sprint. Like, it's I would not have, like, enjoyed that game as much if I didn't have that, because it just made getting around so much easier.
Like I said, they gave you these really mundane missions, but just, like, stupid, crazy tools to get it done, which makes sure that every mission, no matter how boring it is, always turns out entertaining.
It has some of the most wonderful parodies of, like, pop culture as well. Like, I think Saints Row now is both more blatant and more, like, and has a more refined sense of how to parody things, like, than something like Grand Theft Auto. It's like, I was listening to, I think it was Grand Theft Auto 4, like, it had, like, a chat show, and there was one of them where they did a riff on TMZ, and it was just, like, the joke ends up with, that's right, celebrities deserve to die for being better than us.
Yeah, I was never really a fan of Rockstar's style of comedy, which just kind of be like, let's be as blatant and subtle about this as, like, 5-year-old kids in a schoolyard, but it's like, that's our core audience, so they're gonna like that, right? And it's like, well, you know, I don't really want to be preached to when I play your game, but I mean, that's cool too, I guess.
But Saints Row 4 does it in a way that just makes sense within the universe.
My favorite thing is just, like, how they just kind of prove just, like, how stupid, like, 95% of all just, like, relationship mechanics are by just letting you just, like, have sex with everyone on the ship.
Yeah, push E to romance. Oh, I nearly fell out of my seat when I found the Kinsey one.
Oh, that one's great. I love that one with the robot as well.
Yeah, I love that game so much. It's I also kind of love how, I'm not sure whether it's a vestigial tale thing or it's just them just not giving a fuck. It's like, they give you all these guns, all these cars, all these upgrades. Like, they actually did upgrade all the car mechanics. It's better to drive.
Mm-hmm.
There's more modifications, and none of it fucking matters.
Oh, yeah. It's immediately just rendered, like, useless within, like, the first, like, 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah. It's, like, literally the only weapons I used were the laser sword, the dubstep gun, and the fists.
That's a really good point. I didn't get the fist in 4, actually, because I had the fist in 3, but I never got them in 4.
Oh, no, no, I don't mean the Apocryphist. I mean, I just used the standard no-weapon melee thing.
Oh, okay, yeah, all right. Yeah,
you could just, like, clear out entire troops of Zins by just, like, power-dashing to 1/4 and doing the superpower beatdown thing.
Anyway, to their credit, at least I made, like, cars easier to use by having you just be able to just, like, spawn them anywhere, and then, like, being able to use the radio outside of the car at all times as well.
Yeah, the simulation thing is a wonderful conceit to just make everything as convenient and ridiculous as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
instead
I
am, of like, trying to go, like, the Grand Theft Auto 4 route and make things, like, tediously realistic.
Although there's been a weird glut of stuff like that, like, just since Saints Row 3, there's been quite a lot of, like, virtual reality things that happen in games. I almost forgot that there was one in Mass Effect 3, where you go into the Geth hive mind and it's fucking straight out of Tron.
Maybe, like, after Saints Row 3, I mean.
Yeah, yeah, like, there was a one in Mass Effect 3, which I think was after it. Fuck that. There was a bunch that I just can't remember now, but, yeah.
Remember San Francisco was kind of like that, since you're, like, in a dream coma the whole time?
Yeah.
You could probably say Blood Dragon's that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Blood Dragon's totally that, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's strange that was. It's strange that of all the things that games picked up from that, it was that one fucking computer level. Although it was spectacular. Yeah, outside of that, I think the main other thing I played was Max Payne 3. That was the other thing. Like, I've played a bunch else, but mm-hmm. I think. I was really surprised at how much I liked Max Payne 3. I went into it just not really that excited. I got it because it was cheap, but I also, like, I wanted to see how they'd updated it, because I'd played Max Payne 1 on the PS2, and I was just curious because of all the promotional material and everyone on the internet crying because Max Payne shaved his head and went to Brazil,
mm-hmm.
and complaining that it wasn't quote-unquote noir anymore. Fucking...
I've come to the conclusion that, because, like, I'm a big cinema person, actually, as well, and, like, most people who play games, I don't actually think they know what noir is.
No, like, the best thing as well, like, when you get to the part in the game when he shaves his head and he's now moving through the slums and he's away from the neon lights, the whole point of that section is that nothing has changed. Like, mm-hmm. he sobers up, he shaves his head, he puts on such shades, he's like, I'm taking back control of my life, and immediately he gets mugged, has all his guns ripped off him, and now he's stuck in gangland territory, completely fucked again. And just, like, thrown into a ditch, and is just covered in shit. And he's like, well, why do I even bother?
And, like, he's basically just Ash from Evil Dead, where he's just kind of like, I don't even want to be here anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's just, like, Max Payne 3, I think, is the only protagonist, I think, in video games. That
Max
just...
Payne 3 is the best protagonist.
Oh. shit.
Continue.
Fuck, you've exposed me now, you're right. I don't like video games. I'm just reading from a script. Let me carry on. Max Payne 3 has the best graphics. It is good because it is like Call of Duty, innit? Now from Joel McHale. No, but Max Payne is one of the only protagonists, I think, who is just constantly failing through all these mm-hmm. games. Like, when it pushes you from point to point, but every time you just fucking fail.
I wish the guys who made the Max Payne games would make an Evil Dead game, now that you've said that.
I don't, because it's Rockstar, and it wouldn't be funny.
Well, yeah. I would, like, well, to be fair, like, Rockstar does have their moments. Like, I think this was one of them. I think this was just exquisite. I think Red Dead Redemption, though, I think that was very good. I think, like, at the very least, like, the way they critiqued things in that game, like, the way they, like, criticized the government, like, and you could tell because it was, when they wrote Red Dead Redemption, it was around the time when the FBI was investigating them.
Yeah, thematically, mm-hmm. Red Dead Redemption is a very good game.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of really interesting characters and stuff in it.
Yeah, like, when you meet Death, that's an awesome side mission.
Is that in the Undead Nightmare?
No, you keep running into a mysterious stranger who appears back and forth and just keeps foreshadowing things that are going to happen to you.
Oh, is that who that's supposed to be?
I believe so. It's death on God.
What is this, Twilight Zone?
Jeez. No, I never put
that together. You just meet a guy, and he keeps saying things that like happen to you, and then the last time you meet him, he's stood on your ranch, and he's just stood in a spot under a tree, and he says, this will be perfect. This will be the perfect spot. And then later in the game, when, spoilers, John Marston dies, that's where his graveyard is.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, so, but Max Payne is just, like, built on loss and suffering, and there is just absolutely no joy in his life. And I kind of love that. It's far more compelling to me than just having, like, I am straight white male, I run through jungle, I kill everything and win. Hooray! Like, just a
There seems to have been a running theme of white man's burden in a lot of games this year.
But, like, the thing I love about Max Payne 3 is, everyone just takes the piss out of him. He's like, oh, you think you're the big American hero? Well, everything you've ever done is fucked up, and everyone you've ever loved is dead.
That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, it's just like, but the thing is, I think Max Payne 3 is, like, dismissing the myth of the video game hero. Is, like, this, like, Max Payne 3 is what a video game character in the real world is. He's just, like, singularly compelled to act for no good reason, makes a bunch of dumb decisions, and everyone he loves dies. And it's just wonderful at conveying that.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
But yeah, another thing that I was surprised by was, like, I've been playing PC games for like a couple of years now, but I've never really felt comfortable playing games with a mouse and keyboard. And Max Payne 3, I think, was the first PC game I felt really comfortable with.
It's a third-person shooter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I find third-person games are easier with a mouse and keyboard than most things.
I typically don't, because I just don't like moving a 3D character around with 8 directions.
Yeah.
It's just a mental thing, but like I decided to play Max Payne 3 with it, and it was really good. So there we go. Hooray. Aside from that, I played a dickload of Rogue's Legacy, and that's really good.
There's a patch coming out for Rogue's Legacy that's adding some new bosses, new map layouts, a new class, and 3 new traits.
That sounds sweet. Played the Stanley Parable, which is cute. I haven't played that much of it.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit.
Yeah, it's alright. I thought it was a neat toy. Like, the way it told you different things about game designs and told you different stories via what you did, well, that was kind of neat.
What I just really took away from it big time was just kind of like, especially in the world post Shadow of the Colossus, and especially post Bioshock, there's been, like, so many, like, of these self-reflexive games. But if you play, like, most of them, like, 99% of them are just kind of, like, don't do what you're told because it might be bad. Like Stanley Parable is actually like valid commentary, just like how games are just kind of like manufactured to make you want to like get really invested and tell your friends about it, or like you're given these experiences you're told are your own, but they really aren't and stuff, and like making fun of like the GLaDOS style like narrated experience and stuff, just like making fun of just like every just kind of like broken story trope in games, and just making some valid criticism besides just like, don't do what you're told. And it's like, yeah, we learned that Shadow of the Colossus, and then like Metal Gear, like 30 years ago. But tell me something else new.
Yeah, it's that was my big problem with Spec Ops: The Line as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just like, don't, you're a mod. Like, there's a bit in it where. So, does anybody care if I spoil a bit of Spec Ops: The Line?
Isn't that game a few years old now?
I think it was like last year.
It was last year.
Early last year. I just want to. Just wanted to make sure that nobody here cared. There's a bit in the game where you come across like a giant squadron of troops, and there's a little mortar launcher, and you don't know what's in it, and they're like, okay, we have to use this mortar launcher to get through it. But I decided to try and shoot everyone, because I was like, they like when the characters talked, they were like, this is fucking, there's too many for us to kill. And I was like, there's like 18 guys here, we have sniper rifles, and we're miles away, we're fine. So I tried it. So all they do is, if you try and shoot them, they just spawn guys infinitely on the roofs above you. I was like, oh, okay. And then, so I reloaded it, and I just used the mortar launcher. So in the mortar launcher is white phosphorus, which is banned, and it just burns people to death It just scalds them to death. And you go through and you find out that there was a refugee camp in there. And they were like, you killed a bunch of refugees. And I was like, I tried not to. That's not me. That's you. You've told me I have to do this.
It's like giving you the version of choice. It's like, oh, your choices have consequences. I'm not making choices. You're telling me there's consequences to the things you're making me do instead.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what, like, Stanley Parable pokes fun at as well. Is like, that's one of the many choices pokes fun at, is the whole thing where it's just kind of like, your actions have consequence, but it's like, is it really a consequence if it's like, if it's not a choice you've technically made? It's like, not really a consequence as much as just kind of is like a beat of the story. Like, it's a cute little game. Like, I think you take a lot more from it if you're actively interested in like games writing, or more just really just writing in general. Like, I think for like a lot of people, it's just kind of like a wacky, like, mindfuck game that's narrated by a quirky British guy. But I mean, like, if you actually like give a shit about that and you want something more from your game stories, there's something really cool in that game.
It is interesting. Like, it does as well, like, throw in your face how, like, I love BioWare games, but there is often a problem where in BioWare games they talk how much about choice it is, but nothing changes that much when you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, BioWare games, like, often will present you with, here's option A, here's option B, but the only difference is you get a slightly different ending screen.
See, that's why I'm a big fan of Telltale. I'm so happy that they're suddenly becoming, like, really popular, because, like, I think they did that perfectly with, like, Walking Dead, where it's, like, because I was reading an AMA with the writers of the game, talking about how, like, the games actually aren't about choice. It's just kind of more about, like, making tailor-made stories, where it's, like, for the most part, every player sees about the same thing, but it's, like, it's not, like, stupid inconsequential stuff. Like, we looked at a glass of orange juice. It's, like, we gave Clementine a cup of orange juice when he knew Clementine hated orange juice, and it's, like, it's kind of inconsequential to the story as a whole, but, like, it goes a long way between, like, they'll bring it up in a conversation where it's like, Clementine will be like, I thought you didn't care about me because you gave me that orange juice, and, like, suddenly that helps make the story a bit more impactful for the player, as opposed to, like, that was the evil choice, and now you just fucked up half of the story. Great job. Just kind of, like, it's a little thing that makes your Lee, you know?
I think BioWare have gotten a lot better this generation with Mass Effect and Dragon Age. Like, I think Dragon Age was really good in the sense that it never made the options clear, and there was no right or wrong.
Oh, that's the reason I didn't finish Dragon Age 2, actually.
Yeah, it is difficult to pass out because you're never quite sure.
Like, one of my characters left, and then I found out they were gone for good, and I was like, no, I used that character. I need them. And then I turned the game off and I sold it.
Yeah. Although, like, I did love in Mass Effect 2 where you essentially have the option between playing a game starring Ben Affleck and playing a game starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like,
that's actually, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, if they could have just gotten a different voice actor, like, if they could have just made two linear games and gotten a different voice actor for the Renegade playthrough and just hired Arnold Schwarzenegger. Because that game, it would have been so good just to hear, no, how about goodbye? Perfect.
More games just need Arnold Schwarzenegger for just kind of like whenever you make just a bad choice.
My name is Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite star on the Citadel.
Saying that, though, I do. I really wonder if BioWare, if they should just make a linear game and just, like, because their writing staff is, like, their character work is always fucking spot on. Like, their plots are always a bit, but I think that's because they're, like, constrained to making these big choices and they have to make something broad that works for both. So I wonder if they'd make it just a really good linear game, because, like, well, BioWare of old, I don't know about today. I don't know how much of that still survived. I was going to say the opposite of Max Payne is Tomb Raider, a game that doesn't know what tone it wants to go for.
I've yet to play that. I just bought that on the PlayStation Network. It was on sale. I'm probably going to play it when I'm done with exams and such.
Yeah. Well, let me put it this way. Like, as a game, it's actually quite fun. It's like Uncharted meets a Metroidvania.
Yeah, mechanically, it's great.
Yeah. But there's a bit in the story where essentially, it's as you're going through a tutorial, and you come up to this ladder, and three guys rappel down, and it says, it gives you a little tutorial, and then you kill them all. And then it gives you a tutorial about how to loot dead bodies. So you loot them, And then immediately after, you get a radio call, and he goes, he says, Lara, how are you? And Lara goes, I just had to kill three people. And he goes, that's horrible. And she goes, it was scary how easy it was. And I was like, fuck you, I'm done. You want to tell me how fucking awful murder is after teaching me how to loot dead bodies for XP?
I'm semi-prepared to just kind of, like, ignore the story completely. I mean, like, I'm going to give it a chance. I mean, yeah. Just, like, from everything, like, I've just kind of been like, this story sounds okay. But, yeah. I mean, like, I'll make my judgment once I play it, for yeah. sure, because, like...
The plot's okay, the narrative is annoying, and the gameplay is good. Like, I think if you can get around it all, it's okay, yeah. It's fun.
I think Tomb Raider would have honestly been more interesting if, because, like, the whole point of Tomb Raider is, like, she becomes a survivor, but she doesn't actually survive anything, she's just Metroidvania. Like, there's no actual survival gameplay. Like, if they'd have updated Metal Gear Solid 3, that'd have been rad. Because, like, they talk about how she's a survivor, but all that happens is she gets beat up in cutscenes. Which is annoying, but yeah.
She survives a punch to the face.
Well, it's actually quite grotesque what happens to her.
Also, a few hundred bullet wounds if you're not very good at the game.
Yeah. There were parts of it, though, where I honestly wish, like... Because the whole, like, was like, Lara Croft becomes a hero because of this, but was like, if they'd have just made her an absolute monster, if they'd have just, like, made her, like, if they'd have just made her Nathan Drake, it could have been far more interesting, where it's not, like, because I can't remember where I read it or heard it, but I was talking, like, listening to people talking about, essentially, like, how Lara Croft was trying to be this, quote-unquote, like, feminist retaking of Tomb Raider, but actually wasn't, because she just has the same problem that every other female protagonist has, where for her to be compelled to act, she must have something horrible happen to her. She can't just be heroic out of her own volition.
Yeah. Which, oddly enough, it's like, I'd say the original Tomb Raider kind of does a lot more, honestly.
it's weird, but... Because there's a bit in the game where, like, funnily enough, takes the part I like from Spec Ops, where as Spec Ops goes on, like, the start of the game, your characters are very, like, prim and proper military types. Every time you reload, they say, reloading, and they give call-outs and stuff like that. And then as they get beat up and the game goes on, they start breaking down and their communication starts breaking down to the point where, at the end of the game, the guns they have start breaking, and instead of saying, like, reloading, they'll just, like, just start screaming, fuck! Reload! Fuck! And just start, like, just, like, lose it, and instead of, like, shouting, like, Tango down and stuff, they'll scream, just start screaming bloody murder at their enemies. It's like, that's actually my favorite part of the game. It's just how the characters degrade and how the little call outs they have just change. And Lara Croft does that a lot, where at the start of the game she'll like whimper and run away, and then at the end, like, and the enemies do this as well, they change, they're like, we need to get the girl, and she'll like whimper and cower. Towards the end of the game, they'll start saying, they just start screaming, she's murdering all of us, and she just starts screaming, I'm coming for you bastards. Like, so if they'd have just made her Nathan Drake and just made her a merciless monster, though, I think that'd have been way more interesting.
Sounds like a pretty good empowerment sort of fantasy there.
Yeah. Like, fucking, honestly, Bayonetta is a better feminist character.
That's a pretty bold claim, but I mean...
well, the thing is, like, here's the thing, and I will qualify this, like, Bayonetta is the ultimate, like, empowerment of female sexuality, which makes it both very good and very problematic at the same time. Because it both caters to male needs, straight male needs, by being, you know, a sex fantasy. But just, like, everything about her empowers just female sexuality. So, it's definitely problematic, but it's far more interesting than just sad woman gets stabbed, sad woman stab back.
Oh yeah, I was about to say, like, for sure, like, I definitely, like, really respect Bayonetta for how, like, honest it is. Like, my girlfriend was talking about how, like, she has this friend and, like, her friends can't figure out, like, if he's gay or not, and they're like, he plays Bayonetta, so that means he's straight, right? And I just kind of laughed at her. It's like, honey, if you play that game, it's like the campiest game you've ever played.
Oh my god, I remember.
It's like, that doesn't prove a damn thing.
I played that with a friend near me, and when she, every time she, like, clears an area, she blows a kiss to break a seal, and I just instinctively just did that, and my friend just said, never do that again. But yeah, like, I'm not, like, Bayonetta is one of those things that's, like, so on the line, so extreme, that you can just talk about it either way.
Yeah.
Like, I know there's a Feminist Frequency episode that's going to be about, quote-unquote, fighting fuck ties, so that should be interesting. I assume Bayonetta
is kind of just a male version of, or a female version of Dante, really. Yeah. Like, if you look at Dante, he is that, but male. Like, yeah. He's got just a red leather jacket on with his shirt open so you can see his pecs and his abs, and he's got, like, short sleeves so you can see all them rippling muscles, and yeah. He flips his hair around and winks and smiles at the camera and shit. Like, it's the same character, but female.
Have you seen in, the only part of Devil May Cry 4 I really enjoyed was when you get the, there's a weapon that, like, stabs daggers into them. And, like, the way he explodes is he throws a rose at them.
Yeah.
So there's a bit in it where he's, like, essentially doing a tango while using the weapon with a rose in his mouth, and he's just making a shit ton of innuendo.
Yeah.
And he says, and I thrust it in. And at the end, and he throws the rose at it, and all the swords explode, and he goes, we're all satisfied. Like, that was fucking awesome. But yeah, I always thought Bayonetta as well was just, like, a rib on the Korean MMO armor thing, where it's like, here is your level 99 armor for your female character. It is a string bikini. You are now half a god.
Yeah.
But yeah. Enough of that. Nothing else I played is anywhere near as interesting.
John Charles, what have you been doing?
As I was talking to you guys before the show, I recently purchased a Surface Pro, so now I can actually play PC games. Which is funny, because actually I purchased, like, most of the games I was trying to play wouldn't work, and then I figured out I had to update the graphics card and then tell it not to update, because by default, Windows 8 tries to reinstall the custom graphics card for the Surface Pro, which is, like, horrendously out of date, so I have to just, like, drop updates. But once I got that working, I was able to finally start playing Fuzz, and that's a really cute game. It reminds me so much, in, like, visually and, like, tonally of Where Is My Heart, which is, like, a really, really awesome indie game that nobody played, and I wish everybody did. But I think if people played that before they played Fez, they would have been like, these games are oddly similar, but I mean, Fez is good.
Fez reminded me of a little indie game called Tower of Heaven. I don't know if you ever played that.
Yeah, that's the one that's crazy to look like a Game Boy game, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's a completely monochrome. It's about you ascending, like, if they give you rules and stuff, it just reminded me of that, like, just in feel, like,
mm-hmm.
Well, that was quite neat. Sorry, carry on.
Seriously, though, do go play, like, Where Is My Heart? I think it's coming out on PC soon. It's a PS Mini, so you can play it on, like, every PlayStation device, but, like, it does that whole sort of, like, messing around with video game perspective thing in a way that's very eerily similar to Fez, actually, but, Yeah. What else did I play? I played Gone Home. Gone Home was really good. I know a lot of people are kind of like, they either love it or they hate it. I actually had, like, a really weird revelation after playing Stanley Parable, and I was like, wow, these games do the exact same thing, but Stanley Parable uses comedy, so people kind of, like, warm up to it a lot more. And then, like, I guess Gone Home feels more to people like it's trying to, like, lecture them or teach them something, so then they're like, nothing happens in this game. I'm just kind of like, gamers, right? But, what else? Papers, Please is good. I love Papers, Please. It's stressing me out to no end.
Oh, gosh, yes. Game,
but,
that game...
It's such good immersion gameplay. I love it so much.
That game captures...
I can only play one day at a time in Papers, Please, because at the end of the day, I'm just like, oh, God, I need to stop.
I think I've only played the initial demo version of Papers, Please. I've got it now, but... That game captures a sense of oppression like none other.
Yeah. Just like, especially as you go through the game, like every day it gets a tiny bit harder and a tiny bit harder. But these difficulty increases are tied into what's going on in the world as well. So it's like after the very first day, you only let in people from your country. And that's mm-hmm. it. You just turn everybody else away and it's really simple. It's like, oh, yeah. You're from here, you come in. Day two, it's like, okay, we're allowing immigrants, but they need proper papers, so you're looking at their passport and their entry, and then you're just making sure everybody matches up and lets them in, and then there's a terrorist attack, so then you have to be more strict, and then as you read the newspapers at the end of every day, there's things going on in the newspapers, and then that affects what, like, restrictions get put on or taken off in the thing, and it's really good. But, yeah, like you said, it's so stressful.
It really is, and, like, it gives you some, like, moral choices where there really is no right or wrong, because, like, to me, like, it's like you either do, like, the right thing and, like, let somebody through and, like, risk a job or risk them being a bad person, and then, like, you go home and it's like, because you didn't let, because you, like, lost just a little bit more extra money because you let in somebody you were supposed to who, like, really deserved to go in, now you don't have enough money and your son died from the common cold, so oops. So, like, yeah.
So I'm just going to ask. I only played the demo version, like I said. Like, the screen where you see your family, is it just a text screen?
Yeah, it's just a text. Yeah, it's like, this family member is sick, this family member is tired, this family member needs medicine.
Because that is the one thing that didn't work about me for the game. Because when I heard people talk about it, I wondered if it was different.
That piece of paper is just you, like, organizing your finances.
Because, like, that just didn't work for me at all. Like, it was just, like, a text screen.
I think the game would have been, like, a little too tedious if...
No,
that's what I was saying. Like, I feel like it'd be too tedious if there was, like, a part where you have to go home and it's like you have to say hi to your family and, like, text your son and stuff. Because, like, I think that'd be a little too distracting from the game. And then, like, suddenly it would make it almost completely about, like, I have to do good to make sure my family doesn't die. But, I mean, like, I think by keeping it, like, impersonal like that, like, that's its way of basically saying, like, you win or you lose, but it's, like, you kind of determine whether winning for you is doing your job or winning for you is, like, bringing home money for your family. So it's, like, there is no, like, objective win state. It's up to you to decide, like, whether your job's more important or your personal life is more important.
I do understand that, but, like, for me, when it is just, like, reduced to, like, the one text screen, it just doesn't carry the same weight that the other part of the game does. So when it goes home, it's like, your wife is dead, it's like, all right, I guess that sucks a bit.
You know what I feel like they could have done to make it more impactful is have just that text screen, but have that like a piece of paper on a table, and just have like the graphics for like the people who stand in your booth as you let them through. Just have one of those people for each of your family members sitting around a table. Like that would have been enough to give it more impact, so that when one of them dies, they're just not there anymore.
Yeah, like, you actually get like the memos while you're like at work, you know, and it's like they have the option to like leave or something or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
it's like I watched The Blacklist recently. Which is a show that you shouldn't watch because it's bad. Like, it's... There are parts of it that are just silly bad, there are parts of it that are written bad, and there's parts of it that are actually kind of gross. Well, there's an episode how liberals are all just money-grubbing idiots, and it compares them to Luddites.
Fun.
Hooray. But, like, every fucking episode in that goddamn show, a child is killed.
God.
Every single episode, it's like, this situation is serious. Look, a child is dead. I'm like, go fuck yourself.
I feel like after a while, that would just kind of stop working.
Like, you know? Lazy writing. It's just like, oh, we can't find a way to make you care, so dead kid.
Yeah, it's like...
Exactly.
It's like...
It's Jurassic Park all over again.
But to be fair, Jurassic Park has the kids be characters. And has them
not Park, around. Bark. That episode of Futurama.
Oh, right, sorry.
Dog. That's sad because a dog dies.
Yeah. But... Yeah, it's just every time a game tries to say, you have a family, I'm like, do I? I'm like, have I, like, grown with them and met them and talked to them and stuff? And when I've not, I'm just immediately, like, I think it's just, like, part, like, because there's so much recently, so many games have killed children. Like, Mass Effect 3 is like, this is so emotional, child is dead. And then watching The Blacklist, child is dead. So I just, every time now that, like, someone important to you is dead, I'm like, did I connect to them? Did I spend time with them? Did I... You know, what was my emotional connection? You're just telling me I have an emotional connection. You're just putting a name up on a screen and expecting me to immediately just snap to it, which maybe is my problem. Maybe I'm just a lot more cynical than most people. Like, I'm not sure, but that's just how I felt about it. It's still I still think it's a fascinating game.
Don't be a sociopath and such.
You're so annoying.
Whenever that happens in a game, whenever they kill family members and stuff like that, especially when it's just told to me, I'm always very, very wary about it. I'm always aware that they're trying to get an emotional response out of me, which just pulls me out of it completely. I'm like, oh, hello, Rhythm Heaven.
Yeah.
But every time that happens, I'm always, like I said, I'm always wary. Every time a game like puts it on screen, like your family has died, I just don't care because I don't know them. I've never seen them. I've no real emotional connection to them aside from the implicit implied link that would be between us.
Yeah. Like, Fable 2 actually caught me off guard with that when I first played it, which kind of makes me feel guilty because it was kind of they didn't do it very well, but it was just it was enough. Like,
but they
married to one person, and I got a dog, and I had a kid. Yeah. And as I played the game the first time, I was like, oh, I actually kind of like this person, and they gave me gifts, so I brought gifts home, and I gave gifts to my kids, and I took them out and did stuff. And then at the end of the game, spoilers for like a 5-year-old game, the bad guy kills your wife and kid.
Yeah.
And your dog.
Like, to be fair, like, at least they, like, tried, and, like, that whole arc was completely optional as well. That was the thing about it. You didn't have to go home. You didn't have to have a family. Like, that arc could have just been completely thrown away and never seen it. Like, and that works way more for me than just saying you have a family, they are dead. Like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Because, like, technically in Fable 2, you chose to have that family, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I went and I found a person and I married them. And then I decided to have a kid.
Yeah. So, I mean, to be fair, though, it might just be, I might just be a complete fucking sociopath. Who knows?
I think it's fair to say that they're kind of trying to trick you into having a reaction. Like, you care about these people. No, I don't. Like, I don't. There's nothing about them.
Yeah. It is a massive pain in the ball. Well, it's not a pain in the balls, but it really sticks in my craw, is all.
I agree. Yes.
I think. I was just saying that whenever a game tries to tell me that I should be sad because someone is dead, it sticks in my craw.
I still stand by what I said for Papers, Please, just in that, like, the game doesn't tell you how you should feel about your family dying, because, like, the advice is just, like, ascribed to, like, whether you think it's more important that you do this job so that you have a good life, or you do this job so you do a good job at your job, because, like, you could technically just play the game and just, like, do your job as, like, well as you can, and just, like, do a good job, and, like, your family and your personal life might, like, fucking suck or whatever. Or I guess your life would actually be better if you just actually do your job, but it's, like, you can just, like, yeah, just do your job and just, like, not help anybody if you don't think helping people is important. But it's, like, if you think being a good person is more important, then it's, like, then your family goes out the window or whatever. Like, I see it kind of more like kind of being, like, a sort of, like, a cautionary fable more so than kind of, like, being, like, a cautionary tale of sorts, I guess.
It's like the very first or second day in Papers, Please. A guy comes through and you let him through because all his stuff's in order. And he says, my wife's behind me, please let her through.
Yeah.
She comes up and she doesn't have the right papers. So you're like, oh, do I let her through and take a strike? Or do I not do that?
And it's a balance of,
do I want to lose money? Do I want to get a strike? Do I already have a strike? If I do I want to get a second one and get penalized?
See, for me,
I always just...
Like, for me, just that part alone would have been good enough for me. Like, I really liked those decisions that I had to make. It was just when it came to the family stuff, it never worked for me, so that never came into consideration in my options. Like,
realistically, they could have done that with any sort of cost. Like, if you have to make money to pay any cost at the end, like, just rent. If they just made rent and food crazy expensive and just replaced that entirely with your family,
yeah,
it would have had, like, the same effect for you, but I think for other people they needed that kind of...
Like I
think it definitely illustrates the fact that, like, you know, like, when you're, like, even just, like, in a normal day-to-day and just, like, regular-ass countries, like, our respective countries, as we all come from different countries, it's like, you know, you go to the store and it's like, you know, maybe a store doesn't have a take a penny, leave a penny, and you're like, come on, man, cut me some slack, and this guy's like, I really can't, and, like, you know, maybe if he is short a penny and he lets you get away with it, maybe he gets a strike. Maybe every time he gets a strike, that's like $30 doesn't get. Maybe he goes home and his son dies, you know? And it's just kind of saying, like, what's happening in this game happens in the real world a lot more often than you think. And it's kind of like, for, like, every person you think is, like, a hard ass at their job, it's like, there's usually a very good reason for why they are the way they are between, like, their job and their at-home life.
Yeah. Like, I think maybe I'm just a fucking sociopath then.
Nah, I mean, like, you can not give a shit about the kids. Like I said, like, that's entirely up to you. Like, the game didn't tell you that's the right or wrong way to feel. Yeah. Like,
I mean,
you just not give a shit. Yeah. But.
Well, maybe I'm just viewing it through the lens of it didn't work for me emotionally, therefore the game failed, as opposed to it just that just being part of the game. Is that just, maybe I'm just viewing it differently. Sorry. Am I back?
Yeah, sorry.
Right.
Yeah, you're good.
I was going to say... I was saying, like, what we're saying was, like, maybe I'm just viewing it different. Maybe I'm just thinking, like, because the family didn't work for me, that that's a failing of the game, as opposed to that being something in the game's favor.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, like, the...
Yeah, it's...
Like, I'm not sure.
It's perfectly valid.
Yeah.
It's perfectly valid.
Like, if you want to blame how little I give a fuck about family in video games, blame Mass Effect 3. Because now every time they try and kill someone, I'm like, I'm onto you.
But,
that can piss me off so much.
I think the only other thing I've really been playing a lot of lately is Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed, which has the longest and stupidest name ever. But that game is so good.
It is Crash Team Racing made by Sega.
Exactly. It looks like, you look at the box and it looks so stupid because, like, it's got this long-ass stupid name, and, like, there's Sonic driving a giant car, and first of all, you're like, man, Sonic looks so goofy in this car. Also, why does Sonic need a car? But it's like, if you actually play the game, it's like, Sonic makes up like about like 5% of that game, because like all the characters just come from like a variety of Sega games. Yeah, all the stages are based off of just kind of like every type of Sega game ever. Like even Sega Tata Sanjiro makes an appearance in one of the stages, and like it's the greatest thing ever. And it's just like,
I'm pretty sure he's a DLC character in Japan.
Oh, he better.
Oh no, he's on the list of, they voted for like 10 characters to be DLC characters, and he like,
yeah, they had a survey. He was the number one ranked character. That's the character people want the most. So like, yeah. They've been still doing DLC for the PC version, so like I think there's still a chance he could happen. Yeah. But I mean the fact that he's in that game, I think, is like proof. And like my girlfriend, like for some odd reason, my girlfriend knows like all the lyrics to like every song in like Sonic R for some reason. And like they just like randomly throw like melodies of like Sonic R songs within the game. And just like, oh shit, that's a song from Sonic R. And like, it don't say like. Is like what Super Smash Bros. Is to like Nintendo, this game is to Sega, and like it's a really good arcade racer. Like, I am honestly shocked at like how good it is. Like, I expected so little from that game, and like, I don't know, like you and like Electric Goldfish kept telling me, like, you should play this game, you'd really like it. And I was like, I'll play it someday. And then like it was free on Steam, and I played it, and I was like, holy shit, this is fantastic.
I have one complaint with that game. And that's that about 30% of the tracks aren't very fun.
It depends on the car and the balance you use, which is one of the shortcomings of the game, is that, like, it's not very clear how each of the carts handles, because what happens is, like, there's a mod for each cart, so it's, like, if you want to focus on, like, acceleration, but, like, take a hit on, like, say, your speed, or, like, focus on speed, but then your handling goes down. It's, like, you can do that, and, like, you know the Axeburner stage, right?
Yeah.
You know how, like, right before the finish line, there's a shortcut, right?
Yeah.
If your car has shitty enough handling, it can't make that turn at all. And on the harder difficulties, you have to take that shortcut to win. So it's like...
Yeah, the mark of a good kart racer is you can pick any style of character and be able to play it on any track. Like, you look at Crash Team Racing, you can pick the heavies, the quicks, the accelerators, the turners. You can win with all of them because it's designed to. Same with most of the Mario Kart games. Like, you can pick any balance of character and play on any track.
Yeah, exactly.
But there are, like I said, 30% of the tracks in Sonic Racing, the Transformed, they're just... I think they're just designed poorly. The other 60% are great, but the
I think that's what the mods are kind of meant to try and cover up, because I was actually playing with my girlfriend last night. We were doing the Burning Ranger stage, and it was a little hard to see on, like, a split screen, because, like, it's hard to see on the stage, but that stage is based on how well you can see the signs on which way to go, and, like, on split screen on a tiny screen, we just, like, couldn't see it, and we just, like, kept hitting the walls, and, like, my car, I had poor handling on my car, and I just couldn't take the corners.
Yeah, one of the Jet Set Radio tracks is like that as well, where it's just, there's like 90-degree turns that they warn you at the last second, and if you can't see far enough ahead of you, you don't see it, and then you hit a wall.
Exactly.
Holy shit.
Yeah, maybe like that's...
I'm just saying, I'm looking at screens for this game, because I haven't played it, I've meant to, but holy shit, you can play as a Shogun from Total War 2.
Yeah, you can play as a Shogun, you can play as Football Manager, you can play as a Dreamcast memory card, you can play as Wreck-It Ralph, which, like, I don't know why more games didn't do that, honestly.
Shinobi, Golden Axe, Jesus. Dwarf Guy, the dancing game, Space Channel 5,
ooh, la, la.
Jet Set Radio, Crazy Taxi. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of awesome characters.
Is the Bayonetta DLC? Could I play as Bayonetta in... Sonic is very family-friendly game.
It honestly, she should have been. She should have had her cart be made out of hair, and her transformation, like, it turns into a dragon and she rides it or something. Like, she would have been great in this game.
Well, then again, I suppose it'd be more appropriate for her to be in the new Smash Brothers game now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, technically she's not a Sega character anyways. That game was just published.
She's Platinum Games.
Yeah, but to be fair, like, there was a, like, because of all the, like, Sega references in Bayonetta, because it was...
They have that stupid space, what is it? The Space Harrier stage that goes on for way longer than it deserves to go on.
And the
that the one that just, like, falls apart and transforms into from driving and flying to all flying?
In Bayonetta?
Oh, Space Harrier stage. Yeah. Oh, in Bayonetta. No, sorry.
No.
Yeah, the stage where it's like, it just goes on for like 20 minutes when it's a joke that's only funny for about three.
I actually really like that stage. But
I got platinum on that stage and I hate myself for doing it.
You guys are mad men, all of you.
I got max platinum on that whole game for the first three difficulties.
It doesn't surprise me for some reason.
There was also an Outrun stage in Bayonetta.
Yeah.
That had remixed Outrun music as well.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, so there are a bunch of Sega tie-ins that would make it very appropriate. But I guess now that that's one thing that really excites me about Bayonetta 2 is what Nintendo references we're gonna see. If it is like the first one.
You'll get a treasure chest and it'll make the Zelda sound. Like I guarantee it.
Like
I'm just wondering how much Nintendo will let.
Well, to be fair, apparently Nintendo are, like, involved quite closely with the development of Bayonetta 2. So that should be interesting. I wonder if they'll just do things like replace the Halos from the first game with rings. Yeah. So have you been playing anything else then?
Nope. Like I said, I'm probably going to try and pick up the Howl of the Saints Saved Christmas DLC, like, tonight or tomorrow or something. So that should be fun.
All right. Hello.
I haven't been playing a lot. I just got Skullgirls, thanks to John Charles helping me out with that.
Yeah, you need to play that too.
For $6. And honestly, when it was in like the open beta on Steam, I didn't like it. I really didn't.
What do you think of it now?
I found, like, I was playing Valentine and I kind of started to get used to it, and then the beta ended, so I was like, I won't buy this. But $6. So I got it. And I'm... goddamn game. The combo system still doesn't make sense. It's like, we want to encourage you to be creative and find max damage, and then as soon as you do, we break your combo for you, so you can't keep going, because screw you. So it's really just... It turned it into find a combo, repeat that combo, which I feel like is what they were trying to stop from happening. But now that I can do damage that's not just like, oh, I punched you 5 times and that's it. Like it feels okay now.
And with that, we'll take a little break.
Back. John Charles had to leave in the middle, so that's why we took that break.
Yes, that's the reason why.
Yeah. I said Skullgirls. I've been playing Papers, Please, but we talked about that already. Been playing a little bit of Pokemon still, because that's kept my attention this whole time. The new Zelda, which I beat. Oh, what were you saying?
I found my Pokemon Silver in a box.
Oh, Silver.
No, sorry, Soul Silver.
Yeah, that's
better. With the pedometer. I'm like, oh, sweet! I will play this on my Nintendo DS that I do not own.
Oh, no. Sold it?
No, I don't even know what happened. I had a DS at one point, and it's just gone.
That's the worst.
Yeah, no. I'm terrible with handhelds anyway. I have an SP that I found. I was doing a job for the council. They were selling an abandoned house, and it was just filled with possessions, and it was just fucking weird. It was filled with, like, old PCs and old sound equipment, and I think the weirdest one was there were just, like, demo tapes for a band me and my dad had never heard of. Just, like, the masters of an album. And in a pile, I found a Game Boy Advance SP. That was, like, 6 months ago, and I've still not bothered to buy a charger for it.
So that's when I bought my DS Lite from my friend. He didn't have the charger, so he only like charged me $20 for it. And it took me 2 months to buy the charger for it. Finally, I bought a game for it before I bought the charger.
Yeah, I don't. I was like, oh, I need to buy a game for it. But once again, digging around in random boxes, what's this? WWF Road to WrestleMania for the Game Boy Advance, starring Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Undertaker.
Nice.
It's terrible.
Doesn't matter.
It's a game that I can try on it, though.
Yeah, I bought Soul Silver before I actually had a charger. It helped motivate me find the charger faster.
Yeah, I was looking at buying Golden Sun and the Zone of the Enders Fist of Mars game.
Yeah. But, yeah, Pokemon, I beat the new Zelda, Link Between Worlds. Huh. It's probably my favorite 2D Zelda ever now. It was really good. I abandoned Animal Crossing, and I feel like a horrible person, which that game does to you.
As your village just now turned into a post-apocalyptic wasteland, when you start it up, there's now Ron Perlman just go, war never changes.
I'd imagine that's what would happen if I could muster up the resolve to put the game back in the DS.
I'm just saying, how much better would Animal Crossing be if super mutants would just occasionally invade? Or it just had vats.
Just snipe that dung beetle from across the town.
Tom not gives you shit. I'm not paying you for anything. Bam. Bloody mess perk.
Yeah, and that's about it. I visited my uncle about 2 weeks ago, and we were playing Call of Duty online with some of his friends. And they were in London. And we were talking, and it turns out one of them was a voice actor who was in the Battlefield Bad Company series, actually.
Huh. Did he say who he played?
Yes. I'm trying to remember right now. It was a sergeant somebody or other who was in 1 and 2.
Well, there were four main characters whose names I can't remember, which shows how memorable they were.
Samuel, I think?
Samuel
D. Redford?
Bad Company. Wow. I feel terrible that I can't.
I have to look up the voice. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, because the voice actor's name is Bruce Johnson. And that is the fella.
It's. What the fuck is it? Yeah, I liked the Bad Company games. I liked one for the campaign and two for the multiplayer.
Yeah. He was in those, and he's in Crisis 2, and some TV show, and he was in a movie with Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Frantic, I think it was.
Well, look at you, Mr. Hollywood.
Yeah, it's strange, the people you run into just like playing something like Call of Duty. It's like this 50-year-old black voice actor from London is just my uncle's friend on Xbox Live.
Right. Now I know who he is.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's a doozy. It's.
Did I talk about Sleepy Hollow last week or the week before?
No. The TV show?
Yeah.
No.
I've been watching that, and it's surprisingly good. Like, I thought it was going to be horrible, but it's.
Forgive my ignorance, what is it about?
You know what normal Sleepy Hollow, Ichabod Crane stuff, right?
Like,
the Headless Horseman.
Like, vaguely. Like, I know of it.
It's just, like, loosely based on that mythos. Like, Ichabod Crane is, during the Revolutionary War, he was part of the British Resistance. and he kills the Headless Horseman, and the Headless Horseman kills him at the same time. And then Ichabod Crane just wakes up in a cave in modern-day Sleepy Hollow. And it's about him trying to figure out what the hell's going on, and convincing this cop that he's his liaison, that what he's telling is the truth, and then, like, weird supernatural stuff starts happening, and it's all connected to him. But mostly, it's Ichabod Crane, guy from Revolutionary War, trying to deal with power windows and things, which is amazing. I love it.
I fish out of water comedy is real easy one to get right.
Yeah, it's like, you take Supernatural, with, like, all the just cool mythological stuff tied in and all that, and then you just add fish out of water. Oh, I was around when we had to use candles, and what do you mean there's not a woman trapped inside that painting on the wall that's moving? And then as this show goes on, he just gets more and more used to it, but there's still some things that just, out of nowhere, just make no sense to him, and he can't wrap his head around it.
Although, do they do the fucking really obvious one with the car?
He almost gets hit by a car, and he doesn't understand.
Yeah, of course that happened.
And then somebody just explains to him what it is, and he's like, oh, of course, that makes sense, because he's also kind of a genius.
Oh, okay.
Like, I assumed that one day we would be able to have carriages without, that would move under their own power. But then, like, they tell him about pollution, and he thinks they're all idiots for continuing using it and things, and it's fun.
Yeah,
it's
okay. It's kind of neat.
It's like mainstream American primetime TV show, so it's not going to be amazing, but it's pleasantly surprised.
I do need a new show to watch, because I finished watching The Blacklist, and that show makes me want to carve my eyeballs out with a spoon, but as soon as the second season's announced, I'm going to watch it, because I'm a glutton for punishment.
I would suggest the new Dracula, then. Which is actually another really good show that I thought wouldn't be. And isn't just typical vampire bullshit. It's Dracula in the... I don't know. It's set... I should look that up. It's set in Old England around the time of the Industrial Revolution. And Van Helsing seeks out and finds Dracula and wakes him up to help him seek revenge on the organization that turned him into a vampire in the first place. And their plan to do it is, this organization has evolved over time, so now that it's mostly a corporation now, and everything revolves around them being invested in the oil trade. So Van Helsing's invented this power source that's wireless Tesla's wireless electricity. And so he recruits Dracula to help him get revenge. And the whole time, Dracula's the protagonist, but he's also just a bad guy still, which is all the characters in the show are actually what makes it good. Like, the fuck all with the plot, but the characters are actually really interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, like, when you were talking about, like, them being related to oil, it was like, I wonder how many fucking really forced and obvious blood for oil comparisons we're going to get.
Zero.
Oh, okay.
There hasn't been a single one.
That's nice, because,
yeah.
Fuck me, I was watching a bit of Star Trek. I was like, oh, I know, I'll watch a bit of Voyager. I haven't watched Voyager in ages. And then I caught one of the episodes where they go back in time. And I just essentially, the entire episode is like, aren't people from the 20th century stupid? How don't they realize how stupid they are for being stupid and doing stupid things with stupid... How can't they stop being so stupid, please, for a bit?
Yeah. Voyager was very heavy-handed in everything they did.
And then I watched Deep Space Nine, where they convinced the Romulans to join the war effort because they got Gil Dirac to assassinate some senators. And it...
See, that's much better.
I feel so bad that for years I just open-handedly dismissed Deep Space Nine. Because now that I'm a bit older, like, I think it may be one of my second favorite Star Trek series.
Well, they had... Like TNG, they had a slow start. Unlike TNG, they also had just bad seasons in the middle, which is what made a lot of people just not like it.
Yeah.
Because you can excuse a slow start if, like, by season two or... If one and two are okay, annoying but okay, and then it just picks up from there, it's fine. You can go with it, it's great. But if it picks up and then all of a sudden there's just a black spot, you don't want to watch it anymore because you think it's going to fall back into the crap.
It's so good, though.
Yeah.
It just, like, it manages to tell moral stories without preaching. And also manages to just... Like, I think Sisko is fascinating more than I gave him credit for because of just how compromised he is.
Most of the time, yeah, I agree.
How far the war bent. Like, it takes a man like Picard, a very moral, upright, maybe not as staunch in his belief of the Federation, of the Federation's code, of the Federation's laws, but a man still very, very staunch, and then finds a way to twist him without making him a monster. Like, it's exquisite.
I love the crossover episodes they have, actually, where those two meet each other after the Borg incident.
Yeah.
They're really well done.
Yeah, I did really like as well when Worf joined the show.
Yeah. They were kind of missing something to tie some of the other characters together.
Yeah. Like, it's nice that O'Brien has someone to talk to now about the Enterprise.
Yeah, like, you had O'Brien and Bashir, and that friendship was okay, but it was very kind of campy in the way they were friends with each other. And then you just had a bunch of other characters who didn't really have any relation to each other, really. Like, Sisko knew Dax before, but technically not, so like, there's a loose tie there. And then you've got, what's her name?
Kira.
Yeah, you've got Kira there, who has no ties to anybody in the early series. And then Odo, who by design is like how Worf used to be in Next Generation. And then you just kind of, you brought in Worf, he kind of tied all these characters together. Because then they all had interactions through him, and then because of that, they had more interactions with each other as well.
Yeah.
Although I never did like Sisko's son.
Yeah, well,
kind of Wesley syndrome there.
Yeah, but he's nowhere near as good as Wesley. Like, he's a really bad actor.
Yeah.
Nog was good, though.
At least Will Wheaton could act. Yeah, Nog's funny. Quark is amazing. I love Quark.
Oh my god, Quark is so fucking good.
He's one of my favorite actors now. Honestly, now that I've seen him in other things, he can really act.
I love the scene as well when he's talking to the Maquis, the Vulcan lady from the Maquis, and he manages to out-logic her.
Yeah.
And he's just talking about, like, buying peace at a premium and buying it low.
Yeah.
And essentially using market economics to tell her not to be a fuckhead. That was quite funny. Yeah, I think, like, Quark and Odo, though, is my definitely my favorite relationship throughout that entire show, though.
Yeah, just by the end, how they're just, like, reluctant friends, kind of.
And they realize that they just sort of have no one else.
Yeah.
What a show. I need to watch more.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it. I also watched Broadchurch, which is really depressing, and that's all. It's the David Tennant crime series.
Oh, yeah, with the lady from Peep Show.
Yeah. It's a really depressing show. It was really well written, but really depressing. move on to... Actually, no, still depressing news. Just news.
Oh, depressing
shit. Konami and Capcom pulling things from the marketplaces at the moment. Konami, because of licensing issues with the company that does Skullgirls stuff, and Capcom, nobody really knows why, but they're assuming it's because their license with Marvel has run out.
Yeah.
So, Skullgirls came off PSN and Xbox Live because, I forget the name of the company that makes Skullgirls, but Konami was their publisher, and they weren't, the Skullgirls guys were making patches and putting them out, and Konami wasn't getting them up on the distribution fast enough, and they had to fight just to get answers back from Konami. So eventually they're like, you know what, screw it, we're cutting ties with Konami, and then Konami had all of their shit pulled, except for on Steam, which is where they self-published. So now they've rebranded Skullgirls to Skullgirls Encore, I think is what it's now, and they're right on Steam still, but they're going to be trying to get everything else back up on Xbox Live and PSN before Christmas, hopefully. which really sucks for them because those are good guys making that game and they don't deserve this bullshit.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say, I assume with Capcom, it's just a case of Disney buying up Marvel and then the Avengers being like one of the highest grossing box office films of all time, and then Iron Man 3 going on to similarly being as ridiculously popular. So now they'll just be asking for more.
Marvel vs. Capcom 3 came out in the middle of the superhero movie boom, I think.
Yeah, but not like Avengers really.
So when all their prices, prices were kind of still okay. February of 2011 is when it came out.
But the thing is, Avengers came out the next year and grossed $1.5 billion.
Yeah, and then Ultimate Marvel came out in 2012. So, like, that was after the Avengers because they heard... No, it was still just before the Avengers because they had Hawkeye in it as a thing to try and help promote. And, but yeah, people are saying that it is because their contract expired and they're assuming that Marvel's new contract they wrote up to keep their deal going probably had an outlandish number put on it.
Yep.
And Capcom only has $150 million in the bank right now.
Iron Man 3 grossed like 10 times that at the box office.
Yeah, Capcom's not doing well. They're kind of being kept afloat right now by Monster Hunter, which is ridiculous to think. But that's like their cash cow franchise in Japan.
Fucking kind of sick sadists like that game. I'll never understand that game. As far as I'm concerned, the point of that game is to run around in a circle for 20 minutes and then get smacked to the ground by a dinosaur and then you quit and run away and cry.
Yeah. There's a ton of Monster Hunter games and they make a lot of money.
Well, I mean...
Capcom just turns around and spends it all and they're not making enough money back. Like, they released like a press thing. They have $150 million in liquid... Or in expendable income, essentially, right now. Like, that's not tied up in things.
I mean, I guess it's better than being bankrupt, but...
Yeah, like, they're not making new games that are selling. Like, the Resident Evil series is part of what's run them into the ground right now, because the last two haven't been good. The last, arguably... it's just... What is it, on six now?
Yeah, five was questionable, but six was pretty well maligned by everyone.
Five and six did not sell well. And then
I thought five sold okay.
They said it sold okay, but it was nowhere near what they were projecting the sales. Right. And unfortunately, Capcom is notorious for expecting far more sales than is reasonable. Which means they also sink more money than is reasonable into some of their games.
I was like, I can't
even... And then after the whole Eggman cancellation and...
I can't even think of games that they released this year. Like, I'm trying to find a list. Was Devil May Cry this year?
Yeah, Devil May Cry was this year.
I know that...
And it didn't sell as well as they wanted to either.
Yeah.
They've got the new...
Lost 3 was just shat out this year. Yeah. Remember Me was this year, and that didn't do very well.
Dragon's Dogma was this year, and it sold okay. They sold a little more than was projected, but it was also a very low-budget game.
Yeah.
New Devil May Cry. There's a new Dead Rising out right now, which is apparently selling a bit below average compared to what they were expecting for a launch title. Street Fighter Cross Tekken, that was the other thing, and it's not done... well either.
It is a shame, but they...
And then a bunch of re-releases, like the Marvel vs. Capcom Origins and the Darkstalkers re-release.
They seem
And Street Fighter 3 re-release.
They seem to be, like, hitting their stride earlier in this generation as well, when they put out, like, in one year, what was it, Street Fighter 4, and a bunch of other stuff that actually did really well.
Yeah.
And they just seem to have petered off, and... are just making a bunch of sequels and don't really know what to do with the new games.
Yeah, and now they've made an announcement that they're going to start focusing on mobile. And not even, like, handhelds, like phones. Like, they're making a new Breath of Fire game that's going to be on phones. Which infuriated me. Because Breath of Fire is my favorite RPG series. And they're fucking putting it on a phone.
I'm like, to be honest, like, if you told me that like 5 years ago, I'd have been pissed off. But like, when I got fucking the first Phoenix Wright games for free on my iPhone, and it was way better than they were in the GBA, I was all right with that.
Yeah, but Japan has this habit of making mobile games that are broken philosophy-wise, I guess you could say. Like, have you seen the Final Fantasy touchscreen game?
Final Fantasy All the Bravest.
Yeah.
Where yeah, that's
literally
the,
just
the problem.
Pay for more things the game. With a Final Fantasy theme.
Yeah, I have seen that.
That kind of thing's not uncommon. And their idea of, like, phone mobile games, like, yeah, Square also put out a sequel to Final Fantasy IV that came out on phones first, I think, that was actually pretty good and was later ported to handhelds.
Yeah,
but it was ported to handhelds because it didn't sell on phones. Like, nobody wanted to buy that on a phone. Why would I do that? I have, like, 12 Final Fantasy games I could have on a DS or a PSP. It doesn't make sense. And then Square got their head out of their ass for a brief shining moment and ported it. And then promptly stuffed it back up as hard as they could.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely not as repulsed as I once was by phone games. Like, they've definitely come a long way. And to be honest, if they did put out, like, a full-length, and didn't fill it with bullshit microtransactions and just, like, put out a full-length JRPG that you could play on your phone, I'd be okay with that. Because I think mobile devices are a good place for JRPGs. Especially
you know,
if they're going to be grind-heavy.
If I thought I could trust Capcom with it, I wouldn't be upset. But it's Capcom. Like, they've lost any trust they've ever had with me. They honestly used to be one of my favorite developers. They had Breath of Fire. They had Mega Man. They had all these games that I loved. And just they've run every one of those franchises into the ground and then just completely abandoned the rest of them.
Well, you know, you just gotta learn to accept that everything you love will be ruined.
I'd rather they ruined after I quit my hobby.
So you die. Yeah. Like, when you die, you can go to shit.
Yeah.
Well, everything you ever know and love will be destroyed before your eyes in a fire annihilation of nuclear flames. But that's life!
Actually, that just reminds me of the Godzilla trailer. Have you seen that yet?
Yes.
Oh, it looks so good!
I am, like, I know Bryan Cranston's in it, but there's some other really good actors in it as well. I'm not coming to my brain, but, like, Bryan Cranston alone, I am sold.
Yeah, I went to see The Hobbit this week, and the Godzilla trailer was up, and it was the first time I saw it on a big screen, and it was awesome. The Godzilla scream at the end was perfect. I'm so looking forward to that movie.
I do hope. Godzilla's a tricky thing because of, like, what it represents for Japanese culture. Just, like, the whole nuclear terror
yeah,
sort of deal. So, like, whenever an American does it, it is very interesting to see how they take it. But I think if they are faithful, no, respectful of the original material.
So far, it honestly looks like it will be.
Yeah.
Like, it's classic proportioned Godzilla from, like, the peaks you get in the trailer.
Yeah.
So it's none of this Godzilla 2000 bullshit. They didn't just try and completely redesign it.
It also, thankfully, is not like Godzilla 2000. The trailer is not just, here is Godzilla, look at him tail whip a building.
Yeah.
It is like, it like builds up the mystery and suspense and is
mostly. It looks to be a proper Godzilla movie in that it is based around the people during whatever the fuck Godzilla is doing.
Yeah.
Because a Godzilla movie, they're never about Godzilla unless it's like Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
And then those it's movies kind of, are always campy and shit.
Yeah. But this one's got Ken Watanabe in it.
Yes, that's the other guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does look interesting. I might actually go and see that in the box office, in the cinema.
Yep.
Which I'm probably lying, because I haven't seen a film since Alpha Papa.
And 47 Ronin actually looks pretty fun as well.
The
Keanu Reeves movie.
Yeah, I was like, this looks really silly. And then there's a line in it where I think it's the lead antagonist is just talking about all the people that will die and just goes, rivers of blood and piles of corpses. But the way she says it just made me laugh so hard. I was like, oh, I'm sold. I have to go and see this now.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun action movie, regardless of whether it's good or not.
But yeah, it does. Yeah, the fighting game thing is unfortunate. I think now developers can self-publish on Xbox on the new consoles. So that will hopefully alleviate a lot of this. I don't know if it's PS4, but I know they can self-publish on Xbox One.
Yeah, and fighting games being on a PC, being like a normal thing now, yeah, is also going to help a lot. Because honestly, before this, the only major fighting game release on PC I can think of was like Guilty Gear.
Yeah, I think another
thing... that was a decade ago, I think.
Yeah. Another thing that really, really helps as well is because of the rotating generation now, it's going to be way, way cheaper to buy a 360 arcade stick.
Yeah.
So now, like, I can just go out and get a 360 arcade stick for my PC and not worry about it.
Yeah, yeah, like, for sure.
I'm really, really looking forward to doing that, actually. I don't know if I'll be actually be any good with it, but who knows, I might actually be able to use Chun-Li for once.
Yeah, those Lightning Legs 100 Hands inputs are something you just have to get used to, or you just don't play those types of characters, unfortunately.
I can't do it with my thumb, but I can definitely do it with my index ring and middle finger, so...
Yeah, I can't even do it. I can't do it at all. That's why I don't play them.
I found that I'm surprisingly good at, like, mashing buttons really quickly, because every time I've heard somebody complain, like, it was really, really hard in this segment when you had to mash the button, I was like, really?
Oh, gee, you should play Budokai 2, then. You'd be great at that game.
Oh, I had a friend who, when SmackDown Here Comes the Pain came out, the submission system was you just, like, got them in submission, you had to mash buttons, and effectively we got it down to a science where we found, like, the way to get the most button presses was to essentially just slide your thumb back and forth over the buttons.
Yeah, I do that with my index finger, the nail, pressed down against the controller, and I just slide that back and forth across the controller.
But we were playing so long and so often and mashing these buttons so hard that we just gave ourselves blisters.
Oh, God. The first video game that gave me blisters was Ape Escape on the PlayStation 1, because they had a boxing minigame where you used the analog sticks, and they were your fists, and the rubber on the PS1 controllers wasn't quite enough that your thumb would grip it properly, so it would always just slide off every time I got the analog stick to the top. Oh, I had such horrible blisters on my thumbs.
You know, the first time I got a blister, I can't say it's because of a video game, but around the time I played a video game was I was playing Dynasty Warriors 2 on the original PS2, right around the time of release, and I played through the entire game, beat the game, no problem, and then for no reason, I went, wow, that lamp looks really bright, thumb.
Yeah, that's not a good way to get a blister.
I guess there is
no good way to get a blister, but...
No, but I've just done tons of stupid stuff like that. It is an unfortunate side effect of being a moron, as I've found out. I don't know what I'm going to do. I once just gave myself a blister because I thought, I wonder how hot a cigarette is, and just went, hand.
Yeah, I touched a car lighter once. That was not my smartest moment.
That actually gives me shivers.
Yeah. Well, we're at like 2 hours, probably.
To be honest, it's a lot less than that, because I have a lot of things to cut out.
Well, we got we'll say 40 minutes before the break and 40 minutes after.
That's probably fine. We'll just close it out. I think that's enough for one go.
Yep. Also, I don't think I'm going to get peace and quiet for much longer.
That's fine. Do you want to close it out, or shall I?
Yeah, I'll do it. This has been episode... We're going to veto it to 20. With a lost episode clip potentially being at the end of this, who knows? Thanks to John Charles for joining us, who can't close out with us.
Because he had to leave immediately.
Yeah. But a year to make gloves, she we'll wanted see you to guys wait. Next time.
Let me tell you a story of my situation. I was talking to this girl from the U.S. nation. The way that I met her was on tour at a concert. She had long hair and a short miniskirt. I just got on stage dripping, pouring with sweat. I was walking through the crowd, and guess who I met? I whispered in the air, come to the picture booth so I can ask you some questions to see if you're 100 proof. I asked her her name, she said blah blah blah. She had 9-10 pants and a very big bra. I took a couple of flicks since she was enthused. I said, how do you like the show? She said I was very amused. I started throwing bass, she started throwing back mid-range. But when I sprung the question, she acted kind of strange. Then when I asked, do you have a man? She tried to pretend. She said, no, I don't. I only have a friend. Come on. I'm not even going for it. This is what I'm going to say. You got what I need. But you say he's just a friend. And you say he's just a friend. Oh, baby, you got what I need. Work for it at this time. I thought just having a friend couldn't be no crime. Cause I have friends, and that's a fact. Like Agnes, Agatha, Jermaine, and Jack. Forget about that, let's go into the story about a girl named blah 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 that adore me. So we started talking, getting familiar, spending a lot of time so we can build a relationship or some understanding. How it's gonna be in the future we was planning. Everything sounded so dandy and sweet. I had no idea I was in for a treat. After this was established, everything was cool. The tour was over and she went back to school. I called every day to see how she was doing. Every time that I call her, it seemed something was brewing. I called the room, a guy picked up, and then I called again. I said, yo, who is that? Oh, he's just a friend. Don't give me that. Don't even give me that. Just watch this. You got what I need. But you say he's just a friend. And you say he's just a friend. Oh, baby, you got what I need. On a surprise visit to see my girl that was so exquisite. It was a school day. I know she was there the first semester of the school year. I went to a gate to ask where was a dorm. This guy made me fill out a visitor's form. He told me where it was and I was on my way to see my baby doll. I was happy to say I arrived in front of the dormitory. Yo, could you tell me where is door 3? They showed me where it was for the moment. I didn't know I was in for such an event. So I came to a room and opened the door. Oh, snap! Guess what I saw? I felt a tongue kissing my girl in the mouth. I was so in shock, my heart went down south. So please listen to the message that I sent. Don't ever talk to a girl who says she just has a friend. Has a friend. Has a friend.